Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by returning guest and my longtime friend, Micah Mitchell, a trusted authority in membership site creation and marketing automation for over 20 years. As co-founder of Memberium, he's helped countless entrepreneurs build, grow, and even sell thriving online communities. Micah's mission is to guide 100,000 content creators towards profitable, lifestyle-enhancing ventures while delivering top-tier client experiences. From launching new courses to automating established platforms, his proven methods consistently drive results. Whether you're just getting started or scaling a successful membership site, Micah has helped tens, if not hundreds of people in your shoes succeed. I've asked him to join us here today to talk about what's new and how to prepare for an AI-enhanced world. So, Micah, thank you so much for joining us today. How you doing, man?
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I'm doing really well. I'm excited for this.
Yeah. We always talk. We just, before this, realized that Mike is getting old. We were talking about how old he's getting now and that we've both been in this game for pushing 20 years and how important the fundamentals are. That might be a good place to start off. Obviously, I want to get into your origin in that. But since we were already talking about that, after 20 years looking back, what are some of the most fundamental things of this? What would you tell yourself coming into it all over again?
So this just popped into my head. Talk about a full circle experience. A long time ago, I had gotten some marketing from Jay Abraham, just in the mail. I don't know exactly how he got me or whatever that was about. And then just a few months ago, I actually saw him in person for the first time. His junk like 20 years ago, right? And put me down this path. And then just saw him recently. And it was funny because 20 years later, I see him speaking and he's definitely using some of the same stories from 20 years ago. You know what I mean? The same testimonials, the same, we did this for this client. And I know because I listened to him so many times, I have it like memorized and I'm hearing him talk about this. And so he's obviously, for anybody who doesn't know, he's one of the marketing godfathers, at least in my opinion, right? One of the greats. And so just to hear the consistency from him 20 years later, he's the keynote speaker at this big event I was at. He's a little older and he like rambled his way through it and whatever, but I guess he's been there and done that, teaching the same things, the same basics, right? The same thing I heard 20 years ago. And I still needed to hear it was the crazy thing. I was still like, oh yeah, why am I not doing that now? I guess that's what I'd say is execution, right? It's like the game hasn't changed. Maybe the execution has changed a little. The game's pretty much the same. You just got to do it better.
So what do you think are the pillars that someone has to stand on to effectively market and sell their business or their community?
I think when it comes to community, because like other businesses, let's say it's a restaurant, like you buy a McDonald's, right? You just have to put it in the right spot and whatever. But for a community where you have to be an expert and people in your field are going to be judging you and communicating with each other about you, et cetera, right? To pull from Jay, he's got this idea of the strategy of preeminence where he's basically saying you have to have the attitude that you are going to be like this person's doctor. Like you're the level of care of a great doctor or a great attorney or something along those lines. And if you treat them that way, they're a client and so on. And I don't want to just quote Jay forever, but after learning that from him, applied that. And it's worked incredibly well in the long term. And when I think of community, I think, yeah, that's got to last a while to make sense because it takes a lot of energy to get going. You might as well be part of it long enough to get profits for years and to keep it going for a long time. I think you definitely have to have their best interest in mind and then communicate that nonstop and communicate in a way that is assumed. Or it's the reason he calls it preeminence is you just basically presuppose that you are the very best for them. And not in an egotistical way, but you then try to be that. Like, okay, I have to be this, right? And then if you can walk the walk and then you can talk the talk extremely well, aka marketing and sales, you're great, right? Because the confidence shows through. And that's what he's about. And I bring that up to say, there's been times when I've been in business just because it seemed like a good opportunity and my heart wasn't in it and whatever. And I don't want to cheat anybody by any means, but it's, oh, I could have probably done better. I wasn't the right guy for that business. And I think that's why those businesses didn't work. But the ones where I was like, I'm all in and fell in love with that client, type of client, you might say, then it worked really well. Because I think they can feel that.
Yeah, I think that is fantastic advice, and it might seem overly simplistic, but especially as guys that have been in the game for so long, you really got to hold on to your why. And I worked with Michael Gerber for most of the year last year, the author of The E-Myth. He's 88 years old, And if you had to wheel him out in a wheelchair, he'd want you to wheel him out in a wheelchair, and he's beating the same drum. And I learned two things, one from watching him, but also from just working with him for a year, just how important what you said really matters. I watched him drill people. I helped him fill a couple of his dreaming rooms. And I watched him drill people like, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. That's a good, because they were giving the right answers, but their heart and soul wasn't in the answer. So even though the words were what needed to be said, the emotion wasn't there. That psychological conviction in them. It was, and that's what I really got, was that part of it. And when I applied that to myself, I've done this twice in my life, but it wasn't about the words so much. It was about two things. One, being able to empathize with your market so well you can describe their life story of the typical person, like a day in their life, as if when we talk, hey, how you doing? What's happening with you? And we share our story, right? Knowing your market. And then the other part of that is having your own tie into that, your own purpose, your own meaning, that fire that's within. I think that's an incredibly powerful thing, because you can know all these special techniques in that, but it's like the book report, you just don't get done. If you're not really committed, you're not going to be with it. And so I say I've done it twice, because I did that when I had my mini retirement. You were commenting on my background when I first moved to the Philippines. I made a bunch of money. I made a mini retirement, and I was like, what do I do? And then I did it again about a year and a half ago. And I just think that's great advice for people, that often if you're not doing better than you are right now, it might be because either you're not in touch with the market as well as you think you are, or the other one, it's not in your heart and soul. And that takes soul searching. That takes you sitting alone with no distractions in a room and a pen and a piece of paper, or walking in nature or whatever that is for you, just sitting with your thoughts and really trying to come to, forgive the quote, but like a come to Jesus, trying to find your come to Jesus moment where the stars align and things click. And then suddenly you can't stop because you've got this mission. Did I misspeak in any of that, Micah? What do you think?
Not at all. It's so cool that you bring up Michael Gerber as well, because he's got a less well-known book called Awakening the Entrepreneur Within. Mm-hmm. And that was one I read, I'm trying to think of the year, not quite 20 years ago, but at some point along there, where I was really down because I think I was just trying to make money, exactly in line with what we're saying. And that book I started reading, I remember in the evening, and I didn't put it down until I was done with it in the morning, like a old-fashioned hardcover book. And the message in there about awakening the entrepreneur within is exactly what we're talking about. And I'm sure you picked up from him, because it's just like a riff on how he thinks generally, but he goes really deep on this, where he's saying, you're not really an entrepreneur if you just have a business and you're making money from some sort of business enterprise. You're an entrepreneur when you're completely obsessed with something, right? You're like living that thing.
Yep.
You and it are not really separable. And he talks about how when you do find, that's when the entrepreneur awakens. And I totally felt that. That's why I finished that book, like whatever it was in there. And that's when I decided to go all in on, it was Infusionsoft at the time. And his message was this. So instead, part of it was like, instead of just serving everybody, it's like, who's the one person, right? And I decided, what's this Infusionsoft thing? And then once I went so deep on that, everything became clear, right?
Mm.
And it's almost like a leap of faith where I have taught me a lot of things in the past, like the riches are in the niches, like an inch wide, a mile deep. That's you, I quote you. And that idea, people always think, no, there's no way. And you got to go mile wide. You got to do everything. You got to have this customer and do everything, walk their dog, massage their feet, whatever, right? And it's no, I'm the expert of just this really niche, stupid thing. Most people have no freaking idea what I'm talking about. Mm. And that works way better, right? Mm. But until somebody's actually done it, it's hard to believe, I think. Mm. But like I said, Awakening the Entrepreneur Within from Gerber was mind blowing for me on that.
Yeah, I forget where I heard it, but it was 0 to 1 million comes the fastest path to, from 0 to 1 million is solving a specific problem with a specific solution for a specific type of person consistently. Mm. When you can figure that out and you can do that, and it's just your bread and butter, you know how to find these people, do the dance to get them to buy, deliver what you promise, you know, all that stuff. That's what's going to get you there. So that's such fantastic advice. Now, how does AI shake all this up? I know you're obviously that's a big topic of discussion in communities in the membership world. What are your insights on that?
Yeah. So we, in a couple of months from now, so in April, are doing an event about memberships and AI specifically. And The reason we're doing an event. Oh, sorry about that. We've done these in the past. Wait a second. Shut this off. And they were just about memberships. And I had done them enough times that it got stale for me, just like I'm teaching the same thing. We already have these recordings. What's the point? But with AI, not just coming along, because it came along a little over 2 years ago or so, but it maturing to where the applications are ready for these people. For example, last week we were doing a pre-study group call. And one of the other experts on the call said it this way. They said, because we're having a debate saying, how good is the audio generation today, the AI audio generation? Can you just write a script and it can read it in your voice and that's good? And he said, it's not perfect, but it's better than the alternative at this point. So it's better to send them an audio that's generated by AI of the influencer reading whatever message than it is to send them in text. And I think that idea of it's better than the alternative is starting to creep into more and more areas where initially with ChatGPT, like a couple of years ago, we, as a joke, had it write us a poem about our software, which is super boring, in a Shakespearean style. So it's rhyming these technical jargon words into some lovely little thing, right? And we send it to our audience just more like a gimmick of, hey, check out what AI is up to, right? And then I've been in all these groups studying it for a while, but I noticed it becoming mature over time. Like, oh, now this is a credible application. Now that's a credible application. More and more to where today it's, man, if it's not today, you got like months and it'll be right there. So my mindset on it, especially as it relates to membership sites, is it's a 100% change of the game. Membership sites are just content and communication, just language, right? AI, the base of this is these large language models. I think it touches everything. Initially, my ideas were the obvious things, right? Oh, content generation, refactoring content. But the deeper we've got into it, it's no, this is a chatbot that can understand the user's background. So a member comes to the site to learn about tennis, let's say, and it can actually understand the age of this person, where they live, what the weather is there, all sorts of stuff about this person, right? And then where they are in the program, and then they can ask it a question. Hey, I'm hitting out of bounds all the time on my serve. I'm hitting longer, whatever it is, right? Pretty soon, and in some cases now, it could even analyze a video of this person's serve, or for example, a video of someone's piano recital or whatever, and then give them feedback and even generate a video of the expert. So imagine like any expert, your favorite person, like Tony Robbins or whoever, Oprah, depending on who's listening to this, and you ask a question, hey, what is this and that and the other thing? And then you get a personal in-depth video from Oprah answering that, right? Her voice, her face, her content, as close as possible to as if she actually responded to you. So that's where it's going. And so all these experts, and we have a ton of them who have legacy, I would call it legacy content, where they're like, oh, I've been doing this for 30 years. I'm an experienced doctor. And on the one hand, that's huge credibility. But on the other hand, is how does that translate into this new world? If you have these static videos on this old crappy looking website, like it isn't accessible. And so we right now are all about taking people through this process of understanding what they can do and then trying to, and what we found is for different people, it's different first steps. One automatically was like, yeah, I want to clone myself. And so they did that part. One of them was like, I just want to write these holiday theme related emails. And he fed it a PDF of his book and some email templates and said, rewrite these email templates in my voice. And he was like thrilled. Like I rarely see this guy this happy. And I've known him a long time because it wrote these emails for him and was including stories from his book and like in his voice and tone and using his jargon and speaking to his audience. This stuff is crazy. And so when I think of it in layers where it's okay, it can generate text. Obviously, that's what we all know ChatGPT does. You can turn that text into audio. You can take that audio and generate a video. I think coming up soon is going to be not that you have to generate the text and feed it in, but the chat model will generate the text and using that text on the fly, turn it into audio and video. And you're going to be like interacting like we are on a Zoom call, but with, and in some cases, this is already happening. One of our partners helps success.com. And so they have the virtual Jim Rohn, for example, and his estate or whatever owns the property, but they're the ones facilitating that business. And I love Jim Rohn. So going in and chatting with Jim Rohn, and eventually they'll turn that into, it's a new world. It's almost like reading these autobiographies and biographies of great people. It's going to be interacting with them.
That is wild. That is really wild. So how does someone who's not a Jim Rohn and hasn't spent a lifetime building that legacy. Should they be? How do you I can't compete with Jim. I'm not. What do we do? How do we prepare? What do you think are some of the, I don't want to say AI proof, but what are some of the safe shores, so to speak?
Yeah, to build on the Jim Rohn thing, as an example, Bob Proctor, he worked for Nightingale Conant. So he didn't come up with all that information, but he was around it so much that then later was just in his head and then he taught it, right? But other people had originally written all the material. And so he was the voice, he was like a new version of it. They didn't want the old English, the old accent, right? They wanted the current and the credible guy in the suit with the white hair and the glasses, Bob Proctor. So I think part of it is just delivering through personalities, right? We're in this whole influencer world where different people attach to different influencers. I think in part, like for general, let's say motivational information, that's where that'll go. Some new influencer will read all the greats of the past and put a new spin on it, right? Some people might still want Jim Rohn, but maybe the younger people want, you know, whoever, Mr. Right. Beast.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, because Jim's voices can sometimes be a little high-pitched and whiny, so I get what you're saying. Okay. So I guess now, what are the top use cases? You already talked about using GPT to make text. How accurate is the AI? That's another thing. Should people be concerned that it's going to replace their membership?
People should be, forgive me, but shitting their pants with fright about this, because if you are not on the train, you are getting run over by the train. And in a few months ago, like 6 months ago, let's say last summer, I would have been like, yeah, conventional membership sites are fine. AI is still slightly gimmicky. Even then, I could have been wrong. But from my perspective, that's how I saw it based on the accuracy. And to put my money where my mouth is there, we built a chatbot for Membarium. So we have a software company. It's 10 years old, thousands of customers, right? And we knew we can't have this thing give a wrong answer and crash somebody's site. It has to be right. So we trained it privately for a long time before we opened it publicly, and then we babysat it for a while. And then more and more, it's almost like training a new employee. At first, a lot of attention, medium attention, little attention. And at some point, I'm sure we'll just check it periodically. But I think the same for any influencer, meaning we were in the same boat. We had 10 years of documentation about our software. We were able to get a bot on there and teach it how to understand our documentation, meaning it could suck in all the documentation. But then it was crazy. We started asking it questions and it would answer from some like blog article we didn't know existed anymore because it's not in the navigation, but it still was published somewhere. The AI found it and it quoted that, right? And so we had to say, oh, hey, you know, let's go edit our content for one, but also, hey, AI, you know, use the more recent stuff over the older stuff. And in our case, for example, somebody comes and asks a question and you know our software to a degree, but we have to first ascertain which version of our software are they using, the Keep version, the Active Campaign version. Okay, great. Are they a customer or not? Okay, great. Because they'll ask a question and just based on some keywords, that's easy to make a ton of wrong assumptions, right? So I'm just saying if it's good enough for us to deliver software answers that are maybe important to keep the person's site going. And like last week, we had a doctor on the call, for example, he's a licensed doctor and is saying, how do I know it's going to answer my patient's questions correctly, right? Obviously, that's an issue. The compliance is an issue, right? HIPAA, if it's asking a patient about medical information, these things. So it's still a little bit the Wild West, but it seems smart enough. And I know it doesn't actually understand what it's saying, but I'm just saying the algorithms are sharp enough to give seemingly correct information most of the time. And so it's getting pretty scary in a good way, I think. But also if you're not on the train, like I said, in a scary way.
Right. So I guess I'm circling back and maybe I should just ask AI this, but what are some of the safe beaches and safe shores? If you're just peddling some advice and now I don't need to pay your monthly membership for this, right? What do I go to?
Yeah, so there's definitely a couple approaches to that. For example, this medical doctor does a lot of alternative medicine and he was saying when somebody asks ChatGPT about an issue with their heart or something, because of the sheer percentage of information online about surgeries and medications, it's going to return that. It's never going to come back with this alternative stuff, right? Just as a statistics thing, because it's going statistically off of how do I answer this? So in his case, we were saying essentially you use your information, your proprietary information, and you tell your chatbot to use it as the primary source and the open web, the secondary source, right? So now somebody's coming to him for a more, his brand is Organic MD. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me throwing him a shout out, but then people are coming to him for a healthier, but still medical AI experience. And so he can differentiate in that way. The other thing I would say is, and this is probably more direct to your question, more foolproof. That was like an individual example, but I'll say generally speaking, the answer to your question is prompt engineering. So you can be the, let's say, basketball professional. And then they say, why wouldn't I just ask ChatGPT about basketball? And you say, well, you do ask ChatGPT, but let me tell you how to ask ChatGPT. You join my membership to understand how to interact with all these AIs on this topic, because I'll do all that research. I'll do all the prompts. I'll compare every platform with the same prompt and tell you the pros and cons, et cetera. I think becoming the, and this is, like I said, the broadest answer is if you become the expert at prompt engineering on that topic, you're still the expert on that topic. And then if you take it a little bit further, recently I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, the All In podcast, and they made a really interesting point where they said, these AI models' value is going to go to zero because so many of them are open source and they're all training off each other, et cetera. They're just going to compete each other down. Therefore, the value is going to end up being in the wrappers, the whatever. So I wrap for my membership software or for like membership training or whatever. So people are going to come to me for membership AI interactions and find more value in the wrapper than the general models that are out there that anybody can get. And then the second piece they said, so they said, number one is going to be the wrapper. That's where it's like Uber is a wrapper for cars. Airbnb is a wrapper for houses. Like that wrapper had the value. They didn't have to buy all the cars and houses. So they're saying the same thing here. You don't have to be the LLM. You can just be some wrapper that serves some. And you already see a ton of those making a ton of money already, right? And anyways, the second thing is the tools. So you're either going to be a wrapper that gives context to the AI, or you're going to be a tool provider on that topic. And that's what they were essentially saying is, okay, it seems the value in this AI revolution is going to end up in the wrappers and the tools, similar to the internet, right? The hosting companies, Google, Amazon, all these wrappers and tool providers ended up with all the money in the long run.
I love what you said. I went down mentally so many tangents in my mind listening to your speaking. I think it's a really, first off, the wrapper of AI and the tool provider with AI. That led me to thinking about diversification of work, which Adam Smith talks about in The Wealth of Nations. He talks about how if you just had one guy's trying to make pins, just like pins that you sew clothing with, that they might make 40 or 50 in a day. But when you have a team of 10 people doing it, they'll do 4,000 to 10,000 in the same 24-hour period. And the reason is that the diversification and specialization of the work. So when someone gets a specialized role, you take a task that one person can do relatively inefficiently and you break it into pieces and you have a specialist in every piece, they reach levels of efficiency that weren't hitherto thought possible. And not only that, but they seek ways to automate and enhance with machinery the tasks that they're doing. And it's like the whole marketing thing, a 15% boost in leads and a 15% boost in leads converted to sales and a 15% improvement on buyer to lead ratio and a 15% on lifetime value isn't 15 plus, it's exponential, right? It's an exponential, it's almost like compound interest in terms of the effect. So that's what I'm hearing is that with AI, we're going to have diversification into all these sub-niche uses of AI that it has to be very finely tuned for. You mentioned the organic doctor. Some people you can ask it, but this leads into the other one is being able to ask the right questions. So people may or may not realize, but with AI, we have turned sand into intelligence because we turn sand into silicone chips and silicone chips into AI, right? Into computers, into AI. So we effectively have turned sand into intelligence. But to do that, and that potential has been there for millions of years, as long as sand has existed. But it wasn't until we started asking the right questions that we were able to actually produce that result. So we talked about prompt engineering. I wrote asking the right questions. Great. I give you this infinitely powerful tool. How many people are leading dull, unfulfilling, and relatively uninteresting lives? It's not because they don't have the gift of life and they don't have everything available to them under the sun that everybody else has. It's that they still aren't asking the right questions. They're not doing the right things with it. So I think that's what I got from what you said, that those two things, the diversification and the fact that even right now I should be able to make a fireball in my hand. There's probably some sort of way to do it. And it's there, the potentiality for it's there right now, but I don't have the knowledge. I'm not asking the right questions type thing. So I think that's a great answer to that. What would you recommend to someone starting out and struggling right now to get either their business? The community is such an important component to any business. Even a dry cleaner has a community. A martial arts school has a community. But if someone's starting out and struggling, launching their community or their membership site, business, what would be your, going back to fundamentals, what would be some of your brass tacks advice for them?
Yeah, I love this question because people come from so many different backgrounds. They have so many different issues when I talk to them. Hmm. At first, it seems they're all different, but doing it long enough, I think what they need is they definitely need a few cheat codes almost, right? Like in a video game, when you're first learning it, I need the invincibility one so I don't die in 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And I can look around and learn, and then later I'll stop using the cheat code. And so what comes to mind there is somebody just starting out, this is another kind of leap of faith, but doing some sort of live event, and you can do them pretty cheap for sure, or you can put some money into them or whatever. But the differentiation between you and your competition who's only online, getting is one thing, right? Getting people together in a room where it's not all on you, just the interactions of the other people. Earlier, I was mentioning one of my friends, one of the other experts, just him being in that call and the banter and the back and forth and the clients being on the call and their questions, the putting together of all the people. Mm. And that was a call, but we're going to end up doing that in person. But it's something I've always recommended to people because I've seen so many information businesses over the years do it all sorts of ways, of course, right? Some people start out on their iPhone, whatever, but I do actually feel like there's a turning point when you all meet in person, when you get your community, whatever that means, mm-hmm. together in whatever way you can, it changes the game because you can have photos of that. You can have video of that. Obviously, you can use it as an opportunity to record your content. The way I've done this now several times myself, I did it for Keep initially. I've done it for memberships. I'm redoing it in a different way right now for memberships and AI. I've started with an event every time because essentially you can start selling before you have a product. You're just selling tickets for something you're going to do in the future. And then when you put on the content, it is better in person than it would have been with you and a camera. Uh-huh. Also, there's no opportunity for second, third, fourth takes. It just gets done, right? So the pressure, people say, the gun to the head method. If I had a gun to your head and you had to fix it, what would you do, right? I feel like an event is the gun to the head because mm-hmm. I better show up tomorrow or I got to give all these people their money back and it better be fan-freaking-tastic, et cetera. And so it's almost like a focusing agent. It's like a magnifying glass, like mm. focusing your energy into one spot. And it, consistently for me, and I've seen other people do this too, like I said, it just changes the game for them because even if somebody has come to your event when it was just a handful of people, they'll remember that forever. We met at so-and-so's event. Like it just is like a level above. And during COVID, obviously, this was difficult. And for some people internationally, it can be tricky, but that's part of why I think it is the game changer, especially after COVID, where not everybody's willing to do it. Those who are build a different level of loyalty. One of the guys who's coming to this event, he had just bought the ticket. First email we sent, we were just like, whoa, okay. And I had forgotten, but it turns out he had been to one of my events. I think it was 8 years ago, 8 or 9 mm-hmm. years ago. And he mm-hmm. remembered that. And he's like, I want to be in that room again with these people who are talking about this subject that I can't really find anywhere else. You hear people include it in like their marketing presentation or their this and that presentation, but to get right into like just memberships, communities, and in whoever's case, like whatever your niche is, you bring people together on that and they just love each other, right? Mm. They're like, my tribe, my group, I didn't know this existed. And then since you're the one who brought them together, it's under your tent, your roof, just all that kind of shines on you. So that's part of it. And then I do always take the recordings and say, hey, this is the new info product and sell the recordings. Mm-hmm. So you sell into the event, you sell at the event, anyone there live from stage after you've just blown their minds with your content, you can easily say, hey, join my coaching group or buy the recordings. And then via your email list and other channels and partners afterward, you sell the recordings to everyone else. So there's like multiple paydays along the way of building your content. And I've seen people have this go poorly on them. In other words, I'm going to book a gigantic ballroom for 2,000 people and blah, blah. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying like get an Airbnb where you can fit like 10, 20 people and invite your group. And that way you can control costs. You can put food and drinks in there without the hotel charging you too much and things like that. We could go into that forever, but I'll stay high level for a second and just say the fact that it brings in, you can pre-sell it. You can sell at the event to the people there, higher conversions than online because you have their attention. Mm-hmm. And then you can sell the recordings afterward. And the real kind of cherry on top that we've done in the past is we make it a certification event. So we say, hey, you've been here for 2 days. Here's a test. Like literally, I just typed in questions into a Google Doc and printed it. If you can pass this test, we'll give you a badge and you're certified. We're going to list you on our website. You can list our badge on your website. And now the person can say, yeah, I went to a 2-day in-person training or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I went to in-person training to become certified to blah, blah, blah. And so it's like this killing 20 birds with one stone type of situation. And again, you can control costs. It will put a fire under you, but you're going to come out the other end glad that you did it, mm-hmm. glad that you learned, that you just elevated, that you have product, because the product of, we could record this Zoom call and it could be a product that we could sell, but a recording of a stage performance with the lighting and the audience and the interactions, the panels, mm-hmm. you can tell this person prepped, they dressed for this, they invested in it, totally different level of product creation. And so I think of it as like filming in front of a live studio audience and all mm-hmm. these. Anyways, I went on a big old tangent, but that's probably not what you were expecting to hear, but that's what I would do and have done and have seen done.
That's fantastic advice. I agree. The forcing function of it, the reality, you can't hide behind your computer screen. I think that's just such a huge, ultimately, that's a big part of that message is stop hiding behind a computer screen. Did you fill the seats or not fill the seats? You have to look your customers in the face when you deliver what they bought. And you have a bunch of opportunities to turn this into a multi, like a product line, essentially. With one event, you could create a full product line of stuff. And then nobody likes, a lot of people don't like selling. So you also have to navigate that. How do I offer this? How do I tactfully do that? Maybe your first one will be a complete train wreck, but that's something a lot of people, everybody wants to succeed. Even for this call, I told Micah, I just want the baby now. I was talking about a project and I was like, I just want to get to the results part already. But that's part of it is the refining and optimizing it. You'll learn so much better and faster than you would just hiding and tinkering. And I think that's a really important thing. You got to get out of the dojo and get into the real world. So many people, they've been, oh, I've been working on this business idea for 5 years, but they've never put a date on the calendar and actually started committing to collecting money. And actually, one of the first times Mike and I had met, Micah was facilitating a coaching, like one of these live events. That's exactly what it was. And I asked about it. He didn't remember, but some dude sat in a chair. This is back when flash websites were the new big thing. And this guy had raised $1 million and they'd spent something like 900 grand trying to make flash websites SEO friendly because you couldn't index graphics. And he was like, now we got 100 grand and we got to sell it. And everybody in the room was like, bro, you should have spent 900 grand on selling it and 100 grand on just prototyping and building what people were asking for that were willing to pay money. And so that's such an important one. Get out there and just get out there and sell it and talk to the people. I think that's such great advice. Micah, I want to be respectful of your time. This is always such a great call. We could talk for hours, bro. You're my brother from another mother. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that I should have asked you about so far?
I do want to brag about our new branding on Membarium just because it's beautiful.
Good. It is good.
And I'll say that we went through the ringer on that one. We tried to do it ourselves for 6 months and just wasted so much time, meaning we could have been doing productive things and we were doing design, which we're horrible at and never produced anything usable. Mm-hmm. We probably made it work. And then we hired a great designer and she built great stuff and we buckled down and implemented it. And so I bring it up because I think it gets overlooked. Even I've discounted it in the past, but a good friend of mine, actually, the founder of LearnDash, he ended up selling it and whatnot. He's doing well. He's a good guy. Justin Fairman, he was pushing me to update the design for a while and basically saying, every time I would update my design, my sales would go up. It's not like I changed the price or the offer, but the sales would go up because the design was better. And I was so surprised. Our conversions like doubled with the new design. Same traffic, double conversions, pretty much same content, just new face. And in the process of design, we'd run across these different things. And I don't know how statistically reliable, but they're basically saying people will make a buying decision in less than a second when they hit the page, just based on visual perception. And then as long as you don't say something wrong, then they'll buy. But some of the other people will hit it and decide not to buy, but they might still peek out of curiosity. And at first I was like, that can't be true. But the more I've clicked around, the more I'm like, oh, wow, I definitely get like a buy signal or not. And so I think that's what happened, is our design had become outdated. And so like you go to buy a piece of software, and if the design is outdated, the software is probably outdated, goes the thinking, oh, I don't want to buy this one. You know, and so it's, to me, it was eye-opening. And so we've taken that into the membership space with a bunch of our clients, where we look at their brand and we say, hey, I know you're the expert. We've talked, I know you're the expert, but this doesn't look like you're the expert. Like we need to, when I don't want to get lost in design, I'm not advocating people get lost in design land, but I'm just saying probably the extent to which you are being either discounted or enhanced by your design is being overlooked.
That's powerful. Micah, if people want to learn more, if they want to get in touch, do they go to memberium.com? Where do they go?
If you go to membership.coach, so memberium.com is our software, but it only applies to a few people. Membership.coach is our kind of training, which would, I think, apply more broadly to people, and we'll put some freebies there. Right now, it's more about our event, but you can always reach out to support@membership.coach if you want to chat.
That's fantastic. So go send an email to support@membership.coach or go to membership.coach. Micah, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your knowledge. It's always a blast. It's always so great. I have pages of notes. People may want to listen to this interview more than once, make sure they got all the goodies out of it. Thank you so much for coming, knowing you've got your own following, your own staff, your own thousands of customers, your own event to do. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I, so we can all do a little bit better.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you.